might meet them. It's, I think the one down there is 11 bedrooms. And they said, well, if enough people clear out, you guys ought to come down this last week, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, we'll see. Let me know how many rooms are available, because I might even take the in-laws with us in caravan. So that'd be fun, because I'd rather have two cars going one direction driving that far, save a problem. But, oh, absolutely, I could totally enjoy the mountains in the middle of summertime and cool off a little bit.
Roger. Well, I'll tell you what. Eagle Nest is a very, very nice place, and my wife's grandfather, actually my wife's grandmother, originally told her grandfather, or her, you know, Julie's grandfather said, you know, we're going to be in Eagle Nest. And the grandfather said, well, how'd you figure that out? She says, we went to Creed, Colorado, and then we came through Eagle Nest, and she decided that there's this big, huge, huge mountain lake, and we need to be there because I like to go bank fishing, and it's cooler than Oklahoma. So he kind of got roped into that deal, and I'm glad they did, because it's wonderful. It's almost a hidden gem. And if you want to become incognito for a while, then that's the area to do it in. It really is. And it's it's got all the conveniences of home. You know, it's got internet, and it's got amateur radio equipment and all that kind of fun stuff now. So you wouldn't lack anything to do, and everything operates out there, at least in that area, operates, if you're smart, on propane. So we got this big, huge propane tank, and you fill it like twice a year, and you're good to go. And, you know, the nice thing is the propane, the gas works whether or not the power's off or on. Guess I better ID WB5Q.
Yeah, that's how I have my home here set up, is especially for wintertime work. Propane and what little you need, it's going to work either way, power or not.
Roger. The only drawback about going to that part of New Mexico in the wintertime is what happens in Amarillo. Because if you get 14 inches of snow in Amarillo and the 40 turns into a skating rink, you're not going anywhere fast. And I had a good friend of mine who has a place over in Red River, which is about 13 miles north of us. And he went out winter before last, when Amarillo had 14 inches of snow, and he got caught in the middle of it. It took him two full days to get to Red River. And the longest stretch of that was going from Clayton to Springer, New Mexico, which is 82 miles, and it's just basically through, you know, high plains and coming into the mountains. And so it was a harrowing experience, and he told me, he says, I don't want to have another one like that again, so I'm going to make sure that the weather forecast says no snow and lots of relatively warm conditions, at least in Amarillo. Go ahead.
Not a 5 minutes, Hal. Denny, chime in anytime. But I made a trip by 40. A couple of times through Albuquerque, and then we actually went further west into Sacramento. But, it's a drive. It is what it is. It's a little bit different world when you go that direction. Like I said, we got some place in Colorado. It's just something else. And I've seen the pictures day or night, and up there, it don't matter if it snows up many feet, because the driveway is heated going up to the place. It they turn a switch, and there's no snow or ice on the drive. So, but at least for the last half mile or so. But anyway, that's a different deal. They said, oh, anytime you want to use it, yeah, just come up and pay the fever the neighborhood. Like, okay. And then I realized what it was. I thought, oh, never mind.
So how about you, Denny? Have you ever done anything like that?
Driven all over them places, especially from Amarillo, Dumas, and Dalhart, and Clayton, and across there, across the good old volcano. I like that thing, over to Raton. But then I always went north. I never went into Red River or any of those. I have never been up into those guys. Been over on the Durango side, but I never been through Red River, you know, the northern New Mexico stuff, other than to the Boy Scout camp. But none of the real mountain stuff. I did it all in Colorado.
Did you? You said you went to Philmont. Did you ever have a chance to take a trek or go up to Baldy Mountain?
No, we were taking some scouts in and then hanging out in Prescott something over on 25, and then went back a week later and got them. But no, we didn't get to go anywhere else.
Yeah, those treks are about 10 days usually, 10 to, it can be 10 days to 15 day treks, depending upon the route they go up Baldy on. There's two routes. One of them is longer, but the ascent is easier. The other one is basically going straight up the side of the mountain, and as one of my friends said, he said it's like climbing Mount Everest or Kilimanjaro. You know, you take two steps forward and one step back, but once you get up to the top, it's gorgeous, and you can see. My friend said he got up all the way to the top of the mountain. He said, I went over the crest and looked down, and there's your house. And I said, but I'm down there where it's nice and comfy, and you're on top of that mountain where you can get rain or snow or lightning or all of them at the same time. So I said, you know, I've been to Baldy a couple of times. We took friends of ours own the front side of Baldy, so we've actually taken jeeps and gone up to Baldy that way, and a little quicker that way, but 14 to 15 days out on the trail, boy, I'll tell you what, those kids, they earn their badges really well if they go up Baldy. That's a heck of a trip.
I would imagine so. There's some dandy ones. So I've been in the California one when I was in the scouts, and our mountain run was San Gregorio, which is just east of Mount Baldy and Lake Arrowhead and that group up there. It's the tallest one, or the first tall one you see when you're heading into California. And it's 12,000 somewhere, 13,000 feet. It's up there a ways. Yeah, there's a silver moccasin trail up there that's, 60-some-odd miles. Anyhow, we did that thing, and that was a trek in itself, and I haven't done any mountain walking since, I think.
Only took one time, huh?
Yep, that was enough. I did do one out in Texas. Texas or New Mexico, we're not sure what state it's in, but it's in the south. It's south of Alamogordo, the other side. What the heck is it? Anyhow, it's wherever the Texas has got an 8,000-foot mountain, and it's in that range. And I'm not sure if it was the New Mexico side or the other side. Anyhow, there's a geologist thing there, and a ranger and everything, and no water or anything up there. Yeah, well, they have water to drink, but that's about all they've got. And it's the geologists go up there, and there's a 2-mile trek to a cabin that the guy used to own. It was a geologist for an oil company back in the 20s, and it was quite an experience deal. But I walked that 2-mile thing, and you walk right up a dry creek, dry most of the time anyway. That's the only walking I've done in the recent years.
Yeah, those are arroyos, and I'll bet you went up into the White Mountains. I think it's the White Mountains, or am I thinking of New Hampshire? I think White Mountains are New Hampshire. So, but you're thinking around Carlsbad and places like that, I'm sure, and then into the White Sands area and all that. All that stuff is closed off, obviously, because of the because that's where they do their missile testing and all sort of ordnance testing and all that kind of stuff is over in White Sands.
Yeah, they go to White Sands also, but no, this is on the other side of the mountain to the west, Carlsbad, and in like it's right on the Texas-New Mexico line down there, and I'm not sure where that actual place is, either in Texas or New Mexico, but it's real close to it. Anyhow, you're just winding your way on down toward I-10, only you don't go that far, and there's a little trail off to the mountain peak. There's some cliffs there, you know, the geology term stuff up there, what do they call them, a reef or something of that. Anyhow, there's some geologist stuff that they want to look at up in that canyon, and it originally belonged to some guy that was a geologist for the oil company back in the 20s, and he built a cabin up in there. But they don't go to the cabin, they go look at some other geology stuff up one of the hills up there. But no, we just followed it in a ring. It's kind of like an arroyo. It's where a dry creek that, you know, when it rains, it gets water in it. And it's a two-mile trek up that part, but the geologist folks go a different direction. And I wasn't going where they go, because that's a dandy climb, and I'm not going to do that.
Roger, I understand. DJ, go ahead.
I don't have nothing to add. I went across, the highest paved road in Colorado there. Denny will know what I'm talking about. I told him the story anyway. I'll never forget that. First week of August, I was up there on a motorcycle, and it started snowing. I had put all my leathers on before we went up the mountain. I was sweating like a pig, but we got up there. I was nice and comfy, and it started to rain this fast, maybe. Anyway, and we get up in there. That road ain't open very often, and one guy, he had nothing but overalls and a T-shirt, and I had a windbreaker I gave him, and you'd think you'd hand that guy $1,000 come off that mountain so he just keep the wind and the snow off of his skin. That's all I ever have for mountain pass. Say, when I was a kid one time, we did, my dad took a motorhome. We had about a 16-foot motorhome. That ain't very long, but our one and only big family vacation, we went from here to Amarillo and then north all the way up to border Canada east, Wyoming and east to North Dakota and then back south, and had to cross Pikes Peak, and I'll never forget Dad stopping on the way down and taking pitchers of water just to put on the stinking brakes to try to keep the thing down, and then the thing started vapor locking and whatnot, and a guy stopped and said, "Hey, take a bunch of clothespins and put on the gas line, and that'll fix it," and by God, it did. It fixed the problem.
Clothespins on the gas line? I guess I don't understand. Are you just trying to restrict the flow or something, or what?
No, I think they act more as a thermal insulator as the motor is hot in the engine compartment. And at altitude, you had a carbureted 350 Chevrolet engine tuned for Oklahoma that when you get up there, it starts a vapor locking. And so by adding the clothespins, it adds insulation right before the carburetor that keeps it liquid. So that it goes into it as a liquid, because apparently things boil at a much lower temperature at altitude than they do at, 2,000 foot sea level or 1,000 foot of sea level versus, you know, whatever that is, 10, 15. So the clothespins, yeah, just acts as an insulator right before the carburetor, and therefore the gasoline would not vaporize in the fuel line before it got to the carburetor. Let the carburetor do the vaporization thing.
It even does it at sea level, because that was an old trick when I was a kid, putting clothespins on the gas line in California.
I've never heard of that. That's totally new to me. And learn something new every day, don't you? I'm trying to think where you might have been in Colorado. Were you on the Intercontinental Divide, you know, which is the highest point in the Rockies? Then they have a road that runs through there.
Yeah, no, the motorcycle thing was Estes Park. That was probably 2000, 2002. I did it twice. Cool ride. And then Needles. There's a bunch of things up through there, way above where most tourists go. And then, no, the deal when I was a kid, I mean, you got to realize that was 30 years ago. No, that was up. We took the motorhome up to up and over Pikes Peak. So, anyway, like I said, going up wasn't that big of a deal. Coming down was a different deal altogether. But that's funny. Denny says he knows about clothespins, and in California, that's because it gets so dang hot out there. And if you're running cars, especially fast cars, yeah.
Well, it's definitely hot now.
These are in Los Angeles area. I remember talking about other cars vapor locking and ours vapor locking and stuff, but the gas actually turns to a vapor before it can get to the carburetor, and that don't work, or before even the fuel pump. And you had to put clothespins all over the fuel line to get it to stay liquid.
That's amazing. I'm just floored. I'd never heard of that, but not surprised. But you know, no telling what people come up with to make stuff work. I'm gonna back out of here for a second and make a phone call, but I'll still have the radio on. So please, gentlemen, carry on.
Okie doke, John. Very good. WA6DKD.
He's right about boiling at altitude. In Denver, water boils at like 205, 206. And here in Oklahoma City, it actually boils a shade over 210. It all has to do with the atmospheric pressure, WC5OU.
Yeah, I know it takes longer to bake a cake and hard-boil eggs up there than it does down here.
That it does. But, yeah, I just was listening to you as I was on my way back from the convenience store about to walk into the house, and figured I would just throw that in because he mentioned something about the altitude, and he's absolutely right.
Yeah, but car gas would turn to vapor back in the... This was back in the 50s, so this is before most of y'all's time.
At our deer camp, we have an old Korean War era Jeep, and this is in Louisiana, and we've done that trick with the clothespins.
Hey, and I guess we're not alone. Poor John got left out.
Yeah, he's around here somewhere. I think he said he had to make a phone call or whatnot. But anywho, I got to get inside. I got to get the medicine to the little one. She's got the sniffles. So, anywho, I will chat with you later, Denny. WC5OU.
Okie doke, Richie. Take care and have a good evening. Glad to hear you on here more often. WA6DKD.
All right, 7-3, Richie. And, yeah, Denny, physics, I don't think, changes just because it was 1950s or whatever it is now. I think it's all the same.
Yeah, it's the placement of where the fuel pump is and the lines going up to the carburetor, which they don't even have anymore. Man, it was, I would assume, the placement of the two mechanical devices that would fail.
No, absolutely. And like I said, some guys stopped. And, like, my dad's like, oh, this thing will pull a thing. And then coming down the hill, like I said, he had to stop a couple times and put water on the brake rotors. I'm sure they were trash by the time we got done with our trip that year. But anyway, it was pretty cool. I mean, I'll never forget it. And I remember as long as I live. And heck, he was talking about the other day some piece of granite we dug outside of one mountain and some other stuff he would have liked to have gotten, but you can't because you're in a national park, and, you know, it all ties back into, you know, rock hounds and all of that. That's why I do what I do for a living. It started with my grandpa, but anyway, yeah. So, but anyway, it was kind of funny because we did what we did, and you almost didn't even know any better, but on the other hand, you figured it out, and, yeah, at some point along the way, the guy says, hey, take some clothespins and do this because the thing wouldn't go. And, you know, you'd stop for an hour, and then you might go 5 miles, 10 miles, and then it wouldn't go anymore. And I'm sure the difference there was that elevation versus, like you said, in California, because it gets really so stinking hot. Those are not problems modern-day cars have with high-pressure fuel-injected systems and stuff. They don't have those issues. Right. Keep it under pressure, don't boil. I mean, you can do the same thing with the water. That's what the pressure cooker is, right?
Yeah, well, new cars have the fuel pump is in the gas tank, so it keeps it pressurized there. So anyhow, that it be. It doesn't get stinking hot in Los Angeles along, you know, in L.A. proper. Out in the desert, most definitely, but not in L.A. But the cars would vapor lock and overheat. And the overheating, these were, a lot of cars were the Ford V8, which was a flathead, and it has two water pumps. One on each side of the engine. It has two radiator hoses going to and from and stuff. But anyhow, they would also overheat due to hot water. And you'd have to pull the water pumps out and drill holes in the veins of the pump because it was pumping too fast through. They did not have a thermostat in them. Anyhow, it would pump water too fast through the radiator and it wouldn't stay in there long enough to get cool. So you would drill small holes in the veins of the water pump and reinstall them, and you didn't have that problem.
I chalk it up there with learn something every day, and yeah, I could see that being an issue if it was pumping too fast and not. It was up a couple of days ago, barring that trailer, I had to go mow my friend's property, and my uncle had come out and show me his truck started. He's done a frame up restoration on a 1942 Chevrolet truck. And he manufactures parts for these things, all sorts of parts, nothing, you know, sheet metal wise, but everything else, gasket seals, you name it. It's made out of paper, plastic, rubber. He manufactures it. And anyway, he started 20 years ago, he told me. He said, man, it's been 20 years since I started this truck when I bought this company. I said, oh, my God. But anyway, I had another uncle built the motor, a brand-new motor for it. He took his old motor and made it brand-new. And upon not running the thing for less than about 20 minutes, he had already blown a head gasket. And, of course, my one uncle tells me all the reasons why. And I mentioned that to my other uncle the other day. And he said, I don't know, something happened. But anyway, the one uncle got with the other one, they fixed the problem, and he said, oh, come look at this. It just starts and purrs like a kitten. And I thought, oh, that's beautiful. And I'm talking, they let the original down to absolutely anything you could possibly do. And most people change things to make them a little bit nicer, work a little better. But to the point that even when you change the head gasket, you have to readjust the valves or the rockers on the valves. You know what I'm talking about?
On an overhead, I guess the gasket thickness messes up the rocker distance. They open and close valves.
Yeah, gotcha. So, like, one uncle tells me this. The other uncle says, oh, we didn't notice a difference. But, no, it is exactly. So, he's like, if you change a head gasket on this motor, it's an overhead valve engine. But he's like, if you change it, if it's a 2 to 3 thousandths out, that changes the distance on the push rod, and the push rod's going into the rocker, and at that point, because it's out on the long end to push the valve down, that becomes 10 thousandths. So yeah, you change a head gasket, you have to readjust all your valves.
Yep. Then they went to hydraulic lifters, and no adjustments on the rockers.
Yeah, it's an old-style problem, and nobody builds these motors anymore. I mean, it was just kind of funny that my one uncle had the problem from the other side of the family, and my other uncle from the other side of the family, he says, hey, he happened to having taken over a machine shop in his retirement, started helping a guy for free, and finally the guy couldn't do it, and he said, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to charge a little bit, and they build all sorts of stuff, but, yeah, it's like Wayback Auto or something like that they call it. But anyway, he builds any and everything people need, mainly heads, but he'll do a whole motor. And he even showed me videos of them boring that block out for this this old 42 Chevrolet truck. And they're kind of rare. There are not a lot of them out there. But anyway, yeah, it was a hoot. But unfortunately, what happened was he had a brand new motor and stuck it in there. He didn't bleed the thing out properly to get coolant and everything in everywhere. And so when you don't do that, it the motor vapor locks with coolant. So it doesn't actually have coolant, so it can't pump coolant and hang on to work. And what you got to do on them is pull the thermostat out, warm the thing up the very, very first time you start it, get it all operating temperature, then pull off the little thing there for your thermostat, throw the thermostat in real quick, and then start it back up a second time, and away you go, and you can bleed it out after that. But otherwise, you'll never get enough water in the block or coolant in the block to heat up enough to heat up the thermostat to let it open.
All kinds of old tricks from old men. That's a stove bolt 6 Chevy engine that they were messing with, and they kept that, or a similar one to it, plumb up into the 50s, running that stove bolt type 6. Yeah, I had one up in my bus. Had an old 51 or 2 Chevrolet-powered school bus, and it had that type motor in it.
Engine that had been test ran on a, you know, they test run them on a thing before they send them out to make sure the motor works. And the other guy gets it home and sticks it in, don't run 10 minutes, blows the head gasket. What happened? Well, you know, thankfully there was no major damage or anything. Everything was good to go, and they put their heads together. He had to drive an hour or so up here, a couple hours up here to help him get it running, and after a new head gasket, but thankfully, that's all it was. You know, on a modern car, head gasket is a new motor. But it's a, they fixed it. They got them together. But, yeah, you know, things about bulletproof, you know, and it lasted that long, and it just had never been rebuilt. But it just didn't have a lot of power and stuff, and he just wanted new. Finally found somebody to do it. It just happened to be one of my other uncles on the other side of the family. But, anyway, like I said, it's one of those things. People are playing with stuff. They don't know what they're doing. And, you know, hey, here's a brand new motor. Take it home and use it. Okay, and it lasted 10 minutes.
Oh, well. Yeah, one of the hot rod tricks is eliminating the head gasket to raise the compression up a smidgen. And they would put copper O-rings in all the various places. Yeah, but anyhow, there'd be no head gasket, and there was zero clearance there. You smash those copper over, and they make a little they drill out a little place for that little piece of copper to go into, and that was the gasket. But there's a whole bunch of them. But anyhow, that's an old hot rod trick from the early years.
I bet they'd run you gain a little compression, and they'd run a whole lot hotter before it blew something, for sure. And, I had number one, just pull the stinking thermostat out. You don't need it. You ain't driving this thing around in the wintertime, and leave the thermostat out. But I know that ain't proper, but you may have to run on choke just a little bit longer. But anyway, you're running a classic car like that, you don't need a thermostat in it. But it's funny you say that about building power stuff. Man, we watched a couple races on Sunday, I did, and while the kids were walking back and forth, guy cleared a quarter mile under 4 seconds, running in excess of 300 miles an hour.
Yeah, the elapsed time and the speed has changed quite a bit since when I used to do that sort of stuff. That was unheard of course. Even 200 miles an hour was unheard of. 190 was a bunch of those, but that was the end for a long time. until, what's his name, did 207 or something like that. But anyhow, it's getting late, and I need to top off my little tea glass, take one pill, and go night-night.
All right, Danny, we'll say 73, and I'll hang around here for just a little bitty bit for John if he comes back. But, man, I couldn't believe that. Like I said, I was sitting there watching it in real time on TV. I just blew my mind. He's